Alan Shannon with me. I don't want to be presumptuous, but are you going to be parked in front of your television set for the Ryder Cup?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things where, and the great thing about golf over a three-day period like this one is you can leave it on, leave the room, and come back. But this event, since they changed the format, Bob, since they went to the Europeans versus the Americans, this has always fascinated me, where individuals finally play a team sport, and I just love it. And it, by the way, I think NBC, there's a real watershed moment when NBC took over the package and did a marvelous job for the 3 days. That changed a lot for me too. I think that's the exciting part of what Ryder Cup means to me.
I'll tell you the part of this that concerns me a bit. I think the Ryder Cup demands personality in order for me to have a level of interest.
Sure.
Not every week on the PGA Tour. That's whatever. And especially the American guys, there aren't a lot of guys out there with personality. But boy, when you get to the Ryder Cup, guys like Seve Ballesteros, guys like Sergio Garcia, who shows a lot of personality on the golf
course. Ian Poulter will be antagonizing every American golf fan on every hole. It'll be fun to watch.
Well, I have so much respect for Poulter. I had an opportunity to play with him a couple of years ago in the Pro-Am or whatever for the Canadian Open. I played nine holes with Poulter. I have a tremendous respect, not only for his talent, but he's such a good guy and a funny guy too.
Well, if I was at Whistling Straits and was walking the course for the 3 days, I think my mindset on Friday would be, I'm just going to go with Poulter every time. I'm going to go with him in the morning. I'm going to go with him in the afternoon and do that Saturday and then go follow his singles match.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
I just love, I love the way he has so much fun with the game of golf. It really is important to me.
We're going to talk about all this stuff. Our pals, Richard Zokel and Ian Leggett, two of the more prominent professionals to play the PGA Tour from this country, will join us. And our topic of conversation is this week's Ryder Cup. That's next after these messages. McCown and Shannon back go with you. It is Ryder Cup week, and it's always a special week. We get it every other year as a general rule, and it arrives this week. Our pals Richard Zokel, Ian Leggett, join us to talk a little bit about this. Do we make too much of the Ryder Cup? Are we subjected to a certain degree of hype that maybe we have fallen into? Or is this legitimately now one of the, I guess, five most interesting weeks on tour? And I say that, of course, because I would say the majors are always, for those of us who love golf, majors are always a highlight. Is this right there with that? Lego, to you first.
Well, I think it's the only rivalry we have in the game of golf right now. So I think that when you look at it, it's, we want a rivalry in the game. It never really has occurred in a very, very long time. We begged for it with Tiger and Phil. Didn't happen. Phil could never really respond to it, but this particular week is the big rival. We could talk about, the Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka rivalry is not a rivalry built around expectations on the golf course. It's a rivalry built on expectations off the golf course. So with that, I think that it is the true rivalry we have in the game of golf. I mean, Zoe can talk about this, looking at, Jack and Arnie when it was out there, Hogan and everybody, those were true rivalries in the game. Unfortunately, we don't have that right now. John Rahm separated himself from the field, and maybe there'll be a rivalry there. We love rivalries in sports. This is the one we get in golf that really has a temperature to it, and I love it.
Richard, who do you root for if you're a Canadian?
I go back and forth.
Yeah, I kind of do too.
Just to follow up on that expectation, yes, there is a lot of expectation, and when you look at it on each individual case, it's great for the media. We're look at how much energy is being put to this discussion on who's going to win, and the interest is there. It grabs the eyeballs, but it's also the poison and the toxicity on the American side. I think that they make too big a deal out of this bonding and unity and chemistry for the U.S. team, developing a task force. You know, they need to play to the strengths of the players, and the U.S. team's strength is individual. And I think to ask them to sit around a circle, hold hands, and let's sing Kumbaya just doesn't work. And I think their expectations, because they're good players, that gets in the way of performance. What wins the Ryder Cup is performance. And it typically comes down to the performance on the green. So I think if the U.S. team has no problem with the President's Cup, they dominate, they're very comfortable. But this expectations of the Ryder Cup for the U.S. team, they get in their own way.
Ian, do you think my perception is, and by the way, I will only cheer for Europe. I won't cheer for the Americans in this one, just because I like the European attitude. I think they have more fun. I believe that the Europeans, they grind better. That's just my own perception, but they grind better. But do you think that the key for the Americans? I mean, this is such an individual sport in the United States, and to play as a team. Is that something that is just so, pardon the pun, but foreign to them?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, when you look at the European Tour compared to the PGA Tour, the PGA Tour is all about individuals. I mean, they rent houses, they fly around on private planes, and irrespective of, and that's not to say the Europeans don't, but it's not in their nature. The European Tour is built around the camaraderie, guys staying in hotels together. So, that's exactly what the European Tour is all about. And I think that leads into, you know, the team perspective every single week out there.
Yeah. The common bond is collectively the Europeans, their common bond is they love to beat the Americans.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, Woosnam saying to me, he just loves beating the Americans, the Yanks. I love beating the Yanks. That's what it comes out of his mouth. So they have a common interest. Lego's right. You know, these guys socialize, they go to the pub, they bond together. And the American team are a bunch of alpha dominant males, and they don't like to socialize. It, you know, and sure, there's going to be some form of unity, but in order to play to their strengths, they need to perform as individuals. They don't need to unite. They just have to perform.
And the gate got open too. So, as you know, as soon as that first unexpected victory on the European side, then there was that out. There's every, right. You know, by the way, there's no element of expectations that the Europeans are going to win. There's a definite element of doubt that the Americans are going to lose. And once that gets into the locker room, I mean, it just, the byproduct of that is that we have this expectation that, you know, David is going to take down Goliath every other year. And because it's become common theme, and this is what's happened now. There's a definite doubt. And, you know, when you've got those relationships like DeChambeau and Koepka out there that become toxic, that bleed into the rest of the team, it takes away from the camaraderie and the team that could be built around Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth that inevitably exists on every single team aspect when you're looking at the European side.
Well, we were chatting about this before we started recording, and Richard was talking about what the Europeans are doing, you know, in practice rounds, and they're clearly having fun and poking fun at the Americans. This is sort of the theme of the Ryder Cups over the last, I don't know, 20 years, since perhaps the dominance of the Americans came into question. And I don't really remember how many years back we have to go for it. But of course, we all know that there was a time where the Americans just whitewashed the British team at one point, and then they expanded to the European team. And even then they were dominant. Can the American team adopt that kind of philosophy, that let's have a few laughs out here? You know, we're going to be serious about it, but I mean, is it in their nature at all, Richard?
Well, that's, I think, the point I was trying to make. It's not in their nature. I think it's always important to go to one's strengths. And the American strengths is individuals. And I think, you know, they got set off balance. What Lego was referring to in 87, they won the Ryder Cup, and then they came back to the American side. Europeans won on European soil. Then they came back in 87 to Muirfield at Jack's course, and they lost on foreign soil. That was a shocker. That just kind of rocked them right there. And then the European team just played, and they performed really well. They were always underdogs. They're still underdogs, but they let the Americans fall on their own sword because of this psychology of it, these expectations. They, you know, the PGA's all of a sudden got to form a task force. Come on, this is, you know, Stricker. Like, you know, Stricker's the nicest guy in the world. Legos, you played a lot of golf with him. He is not an analytical guy, but you listen to him and he's playing and towing the party line that based on the analytics, and you look at the statistics of how these players play Whistling Straits, that's a bunch of hooey. What it's going to come down to, because this is every shot in the Ryder Cup, it's like playing a major championship on steroids. And the people who can perform in those situations, who have a stronger mindset that can allow themselves to not get caught up in expectations, and if they allow themselves to perform, they will, and those are the people who are going to win. So it's toss it up in the air. But I think the Americans are going to win this week. I think the golf gods are going to finally relent and have mercy on them. And I think the U.S. team, we're going to win.
Nobody asked for a prediction yet, okay? Let's not get ahead of yourself.
Okay. I'll stay in the moment here. Okay.
But one of the things too, you know, that doesn't really come into play here that people don't seem to talk about is these Europeans have grown up playing match play. Stroke play is almost irrelevant in the growth of the game in Europe. It's all about match play. Club competitions are match play. So it's sort of in their blood to understand how a match can unfold. Americans don't play that. I mean, the individual, it's about shooting how many under par, and you can shoot as many under par as you want and still lose a match. But I mean, that is something too that really doesn't get discussed a lot around this particular week. This is a complete week of match play, team competition, two-man competition, and how that unfolds. And Americans just don't have a lot of experience with match play competition. And irrespective of, you know, Sergio Garcia or Paul Casey or Ian Poulter, I mean, they haven't played a lot of match play, probably since they've turned 18 or 19 years of old, but it's in their blood. They understand how that particular format exists in the game. And I think that gives them a leg up as well.
Well, talk to me about, let's talk about match play and the difference between that and stroke play. So if you're in a match like the Ryder Cup, what kind of fundamental things do you do differently? What's the real difference physically and psychologically of match play versus stroke play? Dick, to you.
Match play is a completely different game. It's the perfect game for the underdog because the underdog's got nothing to lose. That in a nutshell right there is the secret sauce. And anyone can take down anyone anytime, and match play is perfect for that. It doesn't matter if you make you have a tendency to play more aggressive, and you have a tendency to play with more emotional freedom, and it's easier. It falls in line where the underdog can have a distinct advantage.
But are there specifics, either one of you guys? Things that you might do differently in a match as opposed to one hole in a 72-hole competition? Are you more likely to hit 3-wood off the tee? Are you more likely to take risk? Are you constantly watching what the other guy is doing and where he is and then reacting accordingly? Or do you play your own game? I mean, there's a lot of questions in there, but...
You watch the other guys? Do you watch the other guy's game?
Yeah, absolutely you do. I think that the key to match play, though, when you lose a hole, it doesn't impact the end result. where if you, you know, make a double or a triple, that can impact the end result. If you make a double or a triple on the PGA Tour, the chances of you winning a golf tournament go completely out the window. In a match play that you are starting fresh again, and you can put that aside. And there's we've seen incredible routes in the game in match play competition. But if a guy loses the first two holes in a match, that does not impact the end result. And that's the key to the, you know, as Zoe said, there's a completely different mindset. You know, if it goes 18 holes, it's 18 mini matches that are happening out there. And you're adjusting your game as you go around to how that particular person is that you're playing. And I just think that the Europeans have a better conceptual understanding of how match play is, where Americans, a Justin Thomas puts a tee in the ground on Thursday morning. He is thinking, how many under par can I get by Sunday to win this golf tournament? Match play doesn't work that way.
Well, okay, but how do you play, generally speaking, more conservatively? Do you play more aggressively? Is it entirely dependent on what your opponent does? Is there a singular difference in match play versus score?
Yeah, I think Bob, and Zoe can speak to this too. Quite often, the way I played, the way that most people play the game, doesn't matter where they're playing. Every golf course is different, and certain holes and certain venues fit to your strengths. And you will set a game plan during the week before the tournament starts, how you're going to play every single hole on that golf course. That doesn't happen in match play. You can make that adjustment on the fly based on how your opponent is playing, because that particular hole is not impacting the end result of the final score at the end of the day or the end of a 72-hole tournament. So, yeah, absolutely. You can make adjustments as you're going around based on how your opponent is playing. But, again, I think it's all about, you know, you're setting your sort of game plan hole by hole rather than the strategy that you set forth at the beginning of the week.
Right. If I can follow up on that, you're right. The dynamic difference is it's a completely different psychological perspective in playing. Lego is talking about, so what matters in metal play is from your first tee shot on the first round on Thursday to your last putt on the 18th hole on Sunday, and what you do in the middle, that is one unit. Match play are 18 individual units. So when it doesn't matter if you made a birdie or an eagle and won the last hole, or if you made an eight and lost the last hole, the next shot is a hard reset. And you look at it from that perspective, and you have this opportunity right now on this shot. And then you perform that way. You have this opportunity in this hole. And then whatever happened, whether good or bad in the past, and the person who can stay and do these hard resets and perform, that's the advantage in match play golf. It's a psychological perspective that gives someone the strength. And this is what plays into the underdog's mind.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is some real specific here. So you guys are playing on the tour, as you both did, and you know, whether you're twosome, threesome, whatever, what your playing companion does on a particular hole almost never factors into what you are planning on doing. Maybe a little bit if you're, you know, at the 15th hole on Sunday, but certainly not Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You don't care really what he does. If he knocks it in the water, knocks it in the bunker, it's not going to change what you're going to do. But does it change in match play? Is there a fundamental difference in how you will play a shot? If you don't have the honor, your opponent gets up, knocks it into a bunker, into what you think is a bad lie. Are you more likely to take 3 wood off the tee or play a little more conservatively? That's the question. What's the answer?
Absolutely. Oh, 100%. Absolutely, you do. And I think sometimes, again, it ends up being where a player, you know, when you start that week on the PGA Tour, you will play to your strengths and to your limitations. And just because you're teeing it up with Brooks Koepka or Bryson DeChambeau, and you are a Jordan Spieth type of a player, you're not standing up there trying to launch driver after driver after driver during the week of a tournament. You're setting a strategy, you're playing to your strengths, and you're going out there. match play sometimes can lead you to play into the other player's game, especially if they're dominating you. If you're standing up there in a match and Ian Poulter is playing against, now Ian Poulter drives the ball very well, but let's just say he will adjust his strategy if all of a sudden he's got a match against Brooks Koepka and he's hitting at 350 down the middle of every fairway. He is going to adjust his strategy. That may not be the same way that he would play week in and week out. So again, it is a little bit of a chess match out there during match play that doesn't necessarily exist during a tour event. Now, a tour event, absolutely. We see it week in and week out on the PGA Tour. Guys will take chances hitting at flags they may not normally go at, or hitting driver off tees that they haven't hit driver off a tee during the week because they're trying to play catch up. They're trying to win a golf tournament or trying to make the cut.
Richard,
to me the biggest difference might be what happens with the alternate shot, you know, the foursomes, and it's finally a team game. It's truly a team game. How much interaction do you have with your partner?
Well, it depends on the chemistry of the two players and the partners. You know, like some people can yak it up, and others just want to, you know, be silent. But the foursomes, this alternate shot, as we call it on this side, is the most difficult because it heightens the pressure. Golfers on tour players are typically, they have no problem failing and letting themselves down. But when you're in a team situation, it hurts to let your partner down. It hurts to let all your partners on the team. It hurts to let your country down. And that adds to the pressure, and it makes foursomes a much tougher game. There's a lot more can go wrong. So, and we see this constantly in this alternate shot game. So it is the most difficult aspect of it. Best ball frees you up. When your partner whips it in there close, it gives you a chance to have a free shot at it. So there's a lot of comfort in that. But you're right, John. Foursomes is the toughest of the games that they play.
And I think there's a big momentum in foursomes too that starts right out of the gate. You will see it over and over again. You get, I know Wiersey and I, back when the World Cup, you know, had a format like that, the two man, and I think we shot 5 or 6 under one day alternate shot. And there's a momentum to that. You know, I got on the first hole, I drove it right down the middle of the fairway. Wiersey hit an iron shot in there 3 feet from the hole. And then he hit a great shot off the next tee on a par 3. All of a sudden we had this beautiful momentum going that when you don't get in that rhythm and alternate shot, if you don't get in that rhythm early, it can really go sideways, really, especially if you're playing against a team that does have that momentum going. It's really difficult in the middle of a round to gather any kind of real true momentum in a foursomes format.
Well, we've all played in foursomes formats, obviously at various levels of ability. and there is a tendency clearly to consult, especially with things like putts. And you defer to the better player almost invariably. But in this case, you're talking about, 24 of the best players in the world, all of whom are not likely to elicit an opinion from somebody else. Does this become problematic when you get to a green in a foursome scenario? Well, like, what's the likelihood that you know, one tour player is going to go to his partner, the other tour player, and say, take a look at this. What do you think, this is going to go 2 inches left or 3 inches left? Does that even happen here, Dick?
Sure. Yeah, you'll see it. Some players will collaborate. I never like to do it. How you read a putt is based on how you know what you see in the break, and if you hit it softer or harder, it's a completely different line. And so when I ask, whether it be my caddy's opinion or my player's opinion, unless I'm totally confused and have no idea, I won't yield and ask someone for direction. I don't want someone else's opinion to interfere with my decision and cause me to hesitate. I don't like that at all. I'd rather go down and go into that shot believing that this is what I have to do. I think it's really important to do that, but some guys will collaborate.
And they'll ask that before. I mean, they'll know. I mean, there's guys out there that, you know, week in and week out will rely very heavily on their caddy, and they don't want any other, people in the kitchen. They just want to be left alone. So that conversation often will be had prior to even the match starting, how they want to collaborate. And at times you'll see it. Confusion can set in, and having another set of eyes at it maybe does bring a level of comfort to the player. But I mean, like you said, Bob, these are the 24 best players in the world. They're doing this week in and week out. They don't really need another cook in the kitchen to kind of confuse the situation. So often that will be discussed prior to the match even starting.
Yeah, and I raise the issue with putting only because I think there's more likelihood of that happening there than it would be in the middle of the fairway when a caddy and a player are thinking about, do I hit six or do I hit seven? There's much less likelihood that your playing partner is going to come over and say, I think you should hit six for whatever reason.
Unlikely.
Yeah.
Hey, or so DeChambeau might come over and say six. I think it's a pitching wedge.
I guess my dream would have said that DeChambeau and Koepka play together, but we know that's not going to be in the cards. Are there any specific teams you expect by Friday? I mean, we haven't had the announcement from Harrington or from Stricker about what the teams are yet, but are there any partnerships that you expect to be working on the weekend?
Oh, I think you're going to see a lot of, the European Tour, the European team has a very nice blend of player. And going to, Zoke's comment about the Americans are going to win, I think on paper, this is the strongest European team we've seen in a very long time. There are no, guys out there that we really don't recognize, Brent Wiesberger might be one of those guys, but I mean, a very, very accomplished player, by the way, because we don't see him every week in, week out on the PGA Tour. So I think on paper, I think that the European Tour is very, very strong. But the one thing that usually happens that I think the Americans make a big mistake at, they're under the assumption that a particular team is strong. You'll see them lose a match and they continue to send them out there and get their teeth kicked in again and again and again, under the assumption that maybe they're going to rally and find a cause and find a victory in there. But I think on the European side, you will see this very early on. And this has happened many times. We saw it with Stenson in his partnership on a couple different Ryder Cups, where he played all five matches, dominant. Sergio Garcia. If Sergio Garcia and they find a pairing in that first match, those two people will continue to play together all the way through until they, until this thing comes to the bitter end, and they will ride that horse right to the end. And what ends up happening is, the Europeans will go into that final match as a singles, usually running ahead with the hope that they can hang on. And it just hasn't seemed to translate over the years. So I think you're going to see it early on. I honestly believe, this is a prediction, I think we're going to see Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau go out there. I really do.
Wouldn't surprise me.
They're going to send them out there. And if they go out there and they can have hugs and kisses and go out there and lay a hammering on it, it is over. It is going to be over. And I would love to see it. I think that would be great for the game. This is not the Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson type thing that Hal Sutton made the mistake of doing a few years ago. I think this is good for the game of golf. I think it's great for the Ryder Cup. And I think if they can go out there and have a little camaraderie and have some fun and win a match, I think it'd be fantastic for the whole Ryder Cup and great for the game of golf.
Well, I guess one thing we'll find out is how serious are they about this, this rivalry, this act, this what's gone on. Has this been perpetrated by the media, or is this a real dislike and hatred? Because I'm not 100% sure. I don't think they particularly like each other, but I'm not sure. I think they're playing to the crowd, if you know what I mean, to some extent. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. I want to talk about Whistling Straits. I want to talk about choosing a team and the importance or lack thereof of making selections. And what does the captain mean? We talk a lot about captains. Captains have been blamed for losing Ryder Cups, but really, do they matter? We'll talk about all that when we come back after these messages. It's McCowan, it's Shannon, and it's Ryder Cup week. So no two better.
So are you my partner, about... Bob? You're my partner, so on alternate shot.
I can't remember. Have we partnered in anything? I think we beat Lego one time, or maybe we beat the other way around.
Playing a scramble. I don't know what are you talking about.
By the way, as I recall, I think it was Ian and me.
Oh, was it?
Beating you and your partner, Bob. Is that right, Ian?
It is. And by the way, Shani, with your handicap, you could take down both teams on the American and the European side. So
come on. That's not fair. You can't say that publicly.
Whistling Straits.
Zokel didn't know that. I was going to Predator Ridge. Zokel didn't know that.
Whistling Straits is noted for having an abundance of sand, but John brings his own with him. When he tees it up, so beware, it trickles down his pant legs for all 18 holes, which with Ian Leggett and Richard Zokel here. All right, how much does a captain matter? We have seen, not a lot, but we have seen occasionally where captains have been applauded for their work and a significance in achieving a victory, blamed for losing Ryder Cups. How much does it matter? Richard, to you first.
Well, I think captains, they play a position, but I think it's too much. I don't think that when you look, particularly in golf, I think captains or coaches in other sports and hockey, I think they play a significant role. I think obviously in golf, they play a lesser role. The way Freddie couples captains, he says, just go out there and play. The way some other captains, they get into the analytics, and I think it's hurtful. I think it's too much when the team performs poorly and they blame the captain. I don't think that is right, but I think that's the way the American system is. We see that in college football. We see that in NFL as well. I think that, and we see it in hockey, when all the team gets the same team is put on the ice, but they have a different captain or coach, they have to shuffle the coach. The coach loses out here. So I think there's a lot of that in it. But it does play a role, but I think it needs to play less of a role.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, this is kind of like the golf coach is, he plays a role, but he doesn't win any golf tournaments, doesn't hit any shots. I think when you look at the Ryder Cup and how it's gotten to where, I mean, there's no doubt about it. The Ryder Cup isn't where it is today. If it wasn't for the type of coaching, if you want to call it, or captaincy that the Europeans have, what goes on behind the scenes that we don't see, I think from a standpoint of, you look at the speech that Ben Crenshaw gave at Brookline, I think was impactful and resonated with the team. I think Bernard Gallagher and his conversations to get Seve to play and come on side with the European team inevitably got us to where we are today with this rivalry. If it wasn't for that, sit down that Bernard Gallagher had to have with Seve to get him to come back to the European team, we may not be in the position that we see this particular rivalry exists, because Seve was the catalyst to creating this rivalry that we have. I think Seve's spirit around the game of golf resonated into the Ryder Cup, and that's what we see today. The Ryder Cup is the spirit of Seve and his passion for this particular event and its format. So I think when you look at captaincies and the way that the Ryder Cup is structured now, with the amount of picks that these guys get, absolutely they can be blamed. And Steve Stricker is going to, if Scotty Scheffler goes out there and gets waxed for the next, for three straight days in a row, Steve Stricker's to blame for that. He picked him. So ultimately the captains have much more significance in the picks that they have. Now, as Oak said, I mean, Strick's got a room of analytics. I mean, knowing Steve Stricker, I think he probably got talked out of a Kevin Na pick or a Kevin Kistner pick, because I have no idea how he oversees both those guys and takes someone like Scotty Scheffler, who's never won a tournament on the PGA Tour, who's a rookie, who continues to fold every time he gets an opportunity to win a golf tournament, and he takes him over Kevin Kistner is insanity. So he will be to blame if the Americans lose this thing.
Well, is there, Zokol, is there any reason to understand that kind of a selection? Because most of the time, these guys resort to the obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's the American way. The American way is and Lego's absolutely right. If Stricker's picks, if Scheffler doesn't perform well, and they lose, then the all fingers will be pointing in that direction. But I think all we need to go back to a captain when Ben Hogan was the captain, and all he said to the guys was, "I don't want my name on the losing side of this trophy." That was the incentive enough. You didn't want to get on the wrong side of Hogan, and that was the greatest motivation there is. I think, yeah, it's. I think there's too much of a committee involved that the captain has to be on, and you know, it's just the way it is. And I think that it's not going to change. And if the USA wins and Scheffler plays well, the captain's going to look like a hero. If Scheffler plays poorly and the US wins, he's going to look like he's going to look like he's in serious trouble.
Yeah.
Ian, what role does the golf course play? Whistling Straits, they say it's designed more for the American player. I heard Colin Montgomery call it, it's an American Lynx course. He didn't say it very lovingly. What role will the course play in all of this?
I don't think it plays a role like it used to, Shani. I think these guys play all over the world. And I mean, the European Tour is full of American style players. So I don't necessarily think it plays much of, a role at all. I mean, how they set the golf course up is how they're really ultimately, the golf course itself doesn't really matter. I think, you know, there's no doubt about it that you would think that the Americans with their length would have a distinct advantage on this golf course. But at the same time, this is a second shot, miss the green type of a golf course. And, you know, that's what match play is all about. As we say, the putter is the great equalizer in this game. Right. And the Americans can stand up there and hit all the 350-yard bombs they want around that place. But if Ian Poulter's rolling in 30-footers from everywhere, it is the great equalizer and the demoralizer to that team. So it's a matter of how they set the golf course up. I would think, based on the type of team that they have, they would want somewhat a little bit of a softer conditions out there, I would think. Bryson DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka are not great ball control guys on the ground. So, but I mean, that's up to them how they want to set that golf course up. Golf courses, I don't think it matters anymore. There is no European or American advantage out there anymore.
So you guys, you don't think that this is a bad golf course for either side, but doesn't really provide a significant advantage to the Americans?
Well, I don't see a significant advantage from a length. Well, the American team, if you put them on paper, they outdrive the European team, but I still think it's irrelevant. What's going to matter is how they perform. It's how it's going to all come down to making putts. Who makes those most important putts is
as it always does, right?
As it always does. So, sure, there's going to be advantage if you hit it further, but if you don't finish it off, there's a saying, the longest drive availeth not if you can't make the next putt. Simple as that. And so if they hit it out there and hit it inside and the Europeans knock in a fit 20-footer and Bryson DeChambeau can't convert that 6-footer for birdie, the momentum's going to swing fast in the favor of the European team. So it again, I mean, I can't get any more redundant and repetitive that it comes down to performance, and it's going to matter what happens on the putting green.
So there isn't a golf course that either of you can think of in the United States that if you took a Ryder Cup there, it would definitively favor the American side.
Let me just jump in there. And I think to what Lego said, now that most of the European players play the PGA Tour, they're right. The same players predominantly. Yeah. So I think that's what Lego was referring to.
The only factor I think is the wind might play a factor. It could be up to 25 miles an hour on the weekend. And does that favor either side?
No.
Not really?
No. It blows 25 in Florida every day in Texas. The tour players are used to playing in the wind.
Danny, and too, when you're playing in wind conditions like that, it's just a matter of when you're on your game, mm-hmm. Great ball striking needs to be, that becomes a bit more when you get under windy conditions and being able to control the ball. That's just a relevant of being on your game. And all these guys are great ball strikers. You get under those difficult conditions, putting may not play as big a factor in that, where if you get a guy who's mishitting it all over the place, he's going to get crushed in difficult windy conditions by a great ball striker that day. It doesn't matter how good they putt. But that will play a precedence in a situation like that. But we've seen Ryder Cup after Ryder Cup, and the Europeans have won these things by being able to hold those incredibly important putts at the right time. And they've been beat over and over again by guys that just can putt better. We witnessed it during the Ryder Cup with Davis Love. Davis Love sure. absolutely outplayed Darren Clark the entire day, and Darren Clark hold putt after putt after putt on him, and demoralizing, absolutely demoralizing.
Before we get into predictions, and I think we already have had them inadvertently, but
show's over.
I didn't read the agenda. Sorry, guys.
No. Well, we've talked about this too, and this is selecting the team. What's the criteria, the most important criteria that you would use in making your selection? They're the obvious ones, the guaranteed ones, the ones who get in automatically because of their performance over the course of the previous couple of years. But when you have a captain's pick, is there something specific you would look for? Either one of you.
Yes, I would pick. I would throw stats out the window. I would go with intuition. I would look for mental toughness. I would look for those who have handled. I'd look at the tough situations in major championships. I would absolutely make sure that you would have won at least and dealt with situations. So I think that throws Scottie Scheffler out the door. And how you've evolved in your mental toughness. Like, you look at Kevin Na years ago, he was as nervous as my old coach used to say, as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. But now he's matured himself and he's earned his ability to handle tough situations. After all, this guy had the yips. And I go, that's a strength, and that's something that I would lean towards. So a guy who can adapt in the situation, who has that mental toughness.
And I think too, how you're playing coming in should play a bit of a precedence. And Kevin Na's played extremely well. Kevin Kisner was really starting to find some form. And the thing that I like about Kevin Kisner, he's like Ian Poulter. This guy doesn't want to win. He hates to lose. And in this type of a format, that's the kind of guy you want out there. Like you said earlier, Shani, grinder. That guy who starts that match that you are going to, you're in a dogfight. That there's no way that you're going to rout this guy. And I think Kevin Na and Kevin Kisner have that type of mentality where it doesn't matter which guy on the European or the American team, when they're going out in a match with Ian Poulter, they know they're going to have everything thrown at them. Now, hey, sure, they may win 4-3, but they don't think about that when that match starts. They know they're going to be going out there and this guy's going to be, biting and clawing for every single inch that he can get during this match. So I think that's what you see from the European team. And I don't see that. And again, we keep picking on Scheffler, but I think that I do not see that in particularly his mentality on this particular team, where I see almost every player on the European team has that type of mentality.
Last thing. Who wins? Zokel's already kind of on record. Do you want to expand on your...
He may have changed his mind now. Let's see.
May have. Okay. I doubt it.
No, though. I think the golf gods will play a role in this. I think they will, as I mentioned, they will relent. They've had enough. They've seen enough misery. And they're going to allow the U.S. team to win this year.
And I believe the golf gods will contribute to this. And the Europeans will continue to win.
Well... I'm afraid Shannon's opinion and mine are fundamentally irrelevant up against you two guys, but perhaps a little wager would be appropriate between the two of you, but we'll allow you to do that off the air.
We can do that betting now in our country, Bob. That's okay. We can do that.
Well, it's legal, but...
And we're inclusive.
Well, we're also all golfers.
Richard, that just means you want to take my money. That's what that means.
And I'm happy to fly out to Predator Ridge for Shannon and I to have an alternate shot against you two clowns, by the way.
Oh, so,
no, that's a good idea.
Well,
there we go. Hey, by the way, this is the first time in three decades, no Phil, no Tiger. And the Europeans have really, they've got a lot of senior veteran guys. When you think of Westwood being there and Poulter and Garcia, their experience. They've given the old guard one last swing at the cat, whereas the Americans have gone a little younger.
Can't wait to watch it.
Guys, it's always a special week. Wherever you rank this in terms of the golf season, it's one that real golf fans certainly pay attention to, and we're always looking forward to it. We thank you, as always, for your insight and comments. And I look forward to having an opportunity to chat somewhere down the road. Thanks, boys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. That was fun.
We'll come back after these messages. Well, as always, our thanks to Zokol and Leggett for joining us on the program. They're always fun.
They don't really need us, do they? They can just sit and have a conversation. And
well, no, maybe they should have their own podcast and leave us in the dust. Do you want to pick a side? We didn't pick a side.
I'd like to see the Europeans win. I'm not sure if I know. I think I'll cheer for the Europeans again. I like the way McIlroy plays. We've talked about Poulter. Tommy Fleetwood's fun to watch. I do think that they are a better group of grinders, as we talked about during the show. And I like the way that type of golf is played. The guy that can make that 22-foot putt, to me, that's the magic part of match play and magic part of Ryder Cup. And I just see the Europeans doing it more.
Well, as somebody who carries a passport that says United States of America on the cover, you would think I'd be rooting for the U.S. side, but it's really quite the opposite. I'm the other way around. I root for the Europeans almost all the time, and I don't know why, because you can make the argument at one point they were such underdogs that it would be fun to root for them, but they're not Europeans underdogs really anymore.
Europeans have won 7 of the last 9, Bob.
Well, there
7
you go.
7 of the last 9.
And yet they're not favored this year.
No.
But no. They always feel like the underdog in the Ryder Cup. And
it's because we don't know. Because Ian touched on this a little bit. It's because we don't necessarily know all of the guys as well as we know the 12
that
play for the Americans.
The 8, maybe 10 that are going to play the most are all guys that play the U.S. Tour on a regular basis. So if you don't know them, then you aren't following golf. Look, you only got a couple of minutes left. It's training camp time in the National Hockey League. Time to kind of see what everybody's...
On ice on Thursday. Yeah, and it's funny, what's happened in the last 2 or 3 days is teams have finally signed some of their young restricted free agents. So there's going to be a ton of pressure, Bob, on the Ottawa Senators. They've got to find a way to get Brady Tkachuk signed. And in Vancouver, with Pettersson and with Quinn Hughes, neither guy has signed. And the money that these young guys have got, like Dahlin got $6 million a year for 3 years. Kaprizov got $9 million for 5. There's a lot of money out there that these restricted free agents are going to be getting. And, Vancouver and Ottawa are up against it. They better sign them, get them quick, and get them into those camps.
Well, I saw Canucks management stated a few days ago that they're confident now that they'll get these two young guys signed. Should they be?
Yes, I think. It's an inevitability. What they're doing is they're trying to, do you give them the extra year for and lower the average annual value of the contract? I wouldn't be surprised to see a guy like Quinn Hughes go for the max deal an 8-year deal, and a guy like Pettersson go for a short bridge deal, maybe 3.
We've said this before, the Toronto Maple Leafs are, this is last kick at the can for this management group and probably this collection of players as a unit. If they do not succeed, any way to understand how far they'd go to break this thing up?
I think what you do is, as Kyle talked about when he was on with us, I think they know that they have to find a way to make this sure this team not only gets to the playoffs, but wins a couple of rounds. It's going to be difficult if management gets changed, Bob, as most people think will happen if they're not successful this year, it's going to be really difficult to move those core contracts anyway. You know, they're just too big. They're just too big. And by the way, you know, Maple Leafs got some bad news on Wednesday too, but the fact that Austin Matthews, his wrist surgery, he's not healthy yet. He will be ready for October the 12th, but he's just not healthy yet and won't start in camp on Thursday.
Not the end of the world, I don't think, at this point, no. Although it does create some concerns, I understand. We'll be back. We thank again Zokol and Leggett for joining us. We'll be back again tomorrow. Hope you will be too. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan. See ya.